adults both enjoy.
After listening to Bird Note with her kids, Kim has seen their bird knowledge and her own begin to grow.
I just see them noticing more. We'll try to name the birds outside the window at the feeder, and we're trying to learn the calls a little bit more. It's kind of a way to both appreciate the birds, but also see the growth in yourself.
Her son Ben is adding more bird calls to his repertoire.
I can imitate a mourning dove. I just like birds. I like everything about them.
Bird Note has helped you learn more about the birds around you. So support the show with a donation at birdnote.org.
For Bird Note, this is Ben Bradman.
And I'm Kim Bradman. Bird Note is the bridge between generations of conservationists.
If you love birds like I do, I hope you'll make a donation to Bird Note today.
Support this work at birdnote.org.
You're tuned to listener-supported community radio KBOO, Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.
Election season is here, and at KBOO, we want Portlanders to be prepared to face their ballots with confidence. We've got a brand new limited series coming to our airwaves and your favorite podcast platform. It's called Running on Air, a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. Every weekday, your favorite KBOO hosts will be facilitating a deeper conversation with these candidates, so tune in. Find the full schedule on our website, kboo.fm/runningonair. Listen to any episodes of Running on Air that you miss on the KBOO website or wherever you get your podcasts. That's kboo.fm/runningonair.
Hi, this is Cecil Prescott. Celeste Carey and I are the co-hosts for More Talk Radio, which airs on KBOO FM 90.7 on Mondays at 8 a.m. For 30 years, Celeste and I have been encouraging and engaging interviews and conversations about politics, social issues, and things which concerns you, your family, and your community. Join us on Mondays at 8 a.m. and be a part of this community radio experience.
I'm Mr. KBOO.FM. Them should know it's accurate. Kabaka Pyramid say watch your step, you know what I mean?
Good morning. You are listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Community Radio here in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Althea Billings. Running on Air is a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. In this episode, we're talking with candidates from District 2. We want you to join the conversation. You can call the air room with questions for candidates at 503-231-8187. You can message us a question on the website as well. That's kboo.fm. Click on the chat with us button. And you can email us your questions at runningonair@kboo.org. So let's meet our candidates for the day. Wait no longer. We've got Antonio Fettijohn and Jonathan Tassini in the studio with us this morning. Welcome, guys.
Hey, how you doing? It's great to be here.
Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you guys for coming. So my first question for both of you, why did you decide to run for city council? Let's start, we want to start over here with Antonio.
Well, I see a better thing for Portland, Oregon with me as the leader here. I'm a successful musician. I went number one in Africa. And then I'm cultivated behind a long line of political leaders who developed the city not for what it is now, but what it used to be.
Hmm.
So I come from the Jewish community and the Nigerian community. So adopted by Neil Goldsmith. Jim Pettyjohn is my father, the Adams High School teacher, math teacher. So they molded me to be a world leader, world counselor, and psychologist. So I'm here today to reprogram, reform the city like I have myself.
Okay. All right. And Jonathan, why did you decide to run for council?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure to be on this radio program. I would say that the main reason is I see the biggest challenge in this city is inequality, the gap between rich and poor. And frankly, nobody's talking about that in District 2. Most of the candidates are giving us talking points and talking about helping small business. But the real issue today is that the average working person does not have enough money in his or her paycheck. It's the reason, frankly, the central reason for homelessness. People cannot afford the rent. Homelessness is an economic problem. We should not be targeting the folks who are suffering from addiction or mental illness. We need to fix the economic system, frankly, challenge the free market system in this city. And I just point to, if you look at all the labor activism that's going on. I'm a 40-year union member. I'm endorsed by more unions by far than anybody in this district, 27 representing thousands of working people. I want to note that and give my solidarity to the five people at KABU who are being laid off given the financial situation. I want to tell you, the folks here at KABU and any other worker out there, that if I'm elected to the city council, I am going to be your advocate. I'm going to be the person that stands up for the working person. Look right now at Fred Meyer. There was a strike by the UFC, a union that has endorsed me, over basically trying to get decent wages. There was a demonstration at the OHSU Board of Directors that I took part in where OHSU, who's paying their CEO $1.5 million, is going to lay off 500 people, some of whom are going to lose their homes and are going to have to sleep in their cars, not going to be able to pay for food because they're going to be laid off at New Seasons. There are workers trying to organize a union there. I've been on their picket lines. They're just trying to get a decent contract. I was just outside the Water Bureau of the city picketing again with my sisters and brothers, my union siblings from AFSCME, who are trying to get a decent contract there. So there's a theme going on in this city, that the big powerful interests, the big money interests, the big businesses that are represented by United for Portland, they are trying to continue to rip the average person off, and I will not stand for that.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, I want to get into some of those economic things in a little bit, but to kind of, you know, we're testing the waters as we're here together. And right, Portland will have this new form of government starting very soon. It used to be, 2025 we'll have it. 2025 is right around the corner. But I really find it inspiring that so many people signed up to run for office in this cycle to say that they want to be a part of this crucial transition. And I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities here, but definitely some challenges as well with this new form of government. I want to know, what do you guys think about that? Jonathan, do you want to start?
Sure. I mean, I supported the change in the government, and part of the reason I supported it was actually hiring a city manager, which is not often talked about because I don't think city councilors, I've been doing urban politics for 40 years, city councilors should not be thinking about how many paperclips are in the fire department. They should be doing policy and oversight. I'm less worried about how we're going to arrange the deck chairs on the ship. That's going to take some work. But again, just to repeat what I said before, if we don't have a city council that represents the working person in this city, if we don't have a city council that's willing to challenge the powers in this city who are trying to cut your wages, trying to throw you out of your homes, trying to break unions, if we don't have a city council like that, it won't matter because we won't really change the system. And that's what I've been about my whole adult life. I actually ran my union for 13 years. I've done the budgeting and the legislative work. I've seen this. And again, if you think about the examples I said about the people out there trying to strike and trying to get a decent contract, that's the issue. And I'm going to be quite honest with you. Most of the candidates don't talk about that, certainly not in this district. We actually have one city council currently serving candidate who doesn't recognize the fact that he has supported businesses throwing our hard-earned money to tax breaks to small businesses. There really is not a theme. And it worries me, just as I may not win this race. It worries me as a constituent in this city that we are not willing to take on those powerful interests that have made it impossible for people to make a decent living, not to mention pay the rent.
Right. Well, Antonia, I want to go over to you, thinking about this new form of government, opportunities, challenges. How does that land with you?
I kind of supported it. I liked it. I thought it was a good idea just for me running, because I feel like I'm already involved with a lot of, like, my father was the management of ODOT, PDOT, you know, so transportation and me going to school for animal rescue and fishery and stuff like that. So with the commissioners being more on top of that, as far as being having a say so on what goes on in facilities, like with our wildlife and transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it's.
So, do you like that it's going to a more legislative function as opposed to having to oversee a handful of bureaus that commissioners have in the past?
I think it's worth the shot. And for, like I said, for me stepping up and having a big say in it and a big shot at the seat.
Yeah.
I think that I can fulfill that role very well.
Yeah. Well, you are both running in District 2, which covers North and Northeast Portland. What do you see as some of the most pressing issues for this district? Antonio, do you want to start?
Well, like he's saying earlier, but mine would be more because I am Jewish and Nigerian. So I had to grow up in the middle of all that,
mm-hmm.
Knowing and learning about the genocide and the gentrification, being a part of all that. I'm still live here before gentrification.
Mm. So in North and Northeast.
Yeah, this is, I know the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, I have history here from both cultures.
Right.
So I know it very well. So I feel like, again.
So is gentrification one of the big issues you think that North and Northeast is facing?
Gentrification.
Yeah.
Putting us back where we originally were,
mm.
and our family and roots are, and where we still have a lot of roots and ground, you know. So taking us away from that and putting us in the middle of nowhere really destroys, finish, you know, it's like fatality.
Yeah.
You know, like a finishing off an opponent.
Right, right. Do you have thoughts about what Portland could do to curb that gentrification in
your
absolutely
district? Do. I feel like me being the musician and the animal rescuer and the care provider that I am, I could do more for us entertainment-wise, you know, with facilities and with the homeless problem. Me coming from that and having most of my family involved in poverty, I think it's very important for me to focus on the homeless issue, the public safety, and the marginalized,
mm-hmm.
because they have not been, you know, rectified or repaired. So everyone has been repaired. So I'm trying to come repair them. I've already been repairing people all around, even in different communities. But the only one, I haven't been able to really reach my own like that. So it's time for me to come home. And I've been in Africa, I've been in Europe, you know, so now it's a big problem with the gang violence here. And I need to step involved, step inside, and slow it down, which I can. They're all my family. And part of the reason why they're doing that is because I'm not here, but now that I'm stepping up, we're going to see a switch.
Yeah. Okay. Well, talking about issues facing District 2, I want to go over to you, Jonathan. What do you think are some of the District 2 specific issues in this election?
Sure. I want to take a pause and quickly just say that this is one of the great things about these campaigns. You get to know candidates. I did not know Antonia was Jewish. I am as well. And so this is one of the things we just learned about each other.
Oh, that's
sitting,
great.
Just sitting here. But
I got along, though.
All right. We do a little fist bump here. But I want to say I was raised that way. I'm an atheist. I'm not a believer. And second, given that we've raised this, I just want want to make mention, although it's not in necessarily the agenda here, sure. that what's happening in Gaza and what's happening in Lebanon is an outrage, the genocide against people there. And I stand solidly with the Palestinian people. I stand solidly with Bernie Sanders, who I was a surrogate for in 2015, 2016, who has called for the end of military aid to Israel. So I speak as a progressive Jew. That's been a longstanding position of mine. But to District 2, mm-hmm. so I'll go through three things, and they're all connected, but they hearken to my first point. There is a battle going on over a system that is unfair to the people, and that is certainly affects District 2. There are many working class neighborhoods in Cully, in North Portland, in St. John's, and even the people, if you will, in the mid-district who are doing, and I'm oversimplifying, there are neighborhoods that are doing better. We see that oppressive economic system draining our community. And so wages are too low. The rent is too high. I am a signer and a supporter of the Renters Bill of Rights, and I have been a lifelong renter. And so I will campaign for every one of those points in the Renters Bill of Rights to try to make those things law in the city. Now, in order to do that, part of what we have to do is get what's known as home rule, meaning Portland being able to control rent laws and minimum wage laws, which I'm going to mention in a second. Right now, we have to, unfortunately, defer to the state, and we have to push these at the state legislative level. But to that point, I'm the only candidate in this race that's arguing for raising the minimum wage to $25 an hour. And why is that? Right now, the metro minimum wage is $15.95. People think and celebrate that because they look at the federal minimum wage, which is $7.25. But $15.95, and everyone listening to this program can take out your calculator or on your phone and do the math, that's still a poverty level wage for a family of four. The minimum wage should be federally $25 an hour if you look at productivity over the last 40 to 50 years. So I want to, in stages, move that minimum wage to $25 an hour. And that is not enough even then for people to afford a two-bedroom place, which the minimum wage should be $32 an hour. Again, folks can look it up. Study by the National Coalition of Low-Income Housing. That's what the minimum wage should be. So that is the issue that's plaguing our district and the entire city. People don't earn enough. People don't have enough money. And again, I just want to emphasize again this issue of homelessness. There are too many candidates in this race, partly because they're promoting themselves as the person who should be on the city council, who are emphasizing addiction and mental illness. Now, those are causes of homelessness. They are not the reason people become homeless, generally speaking. We need to support those people who are struggling with addiction and mental illness. But by allowing people to emphasize that, we are, first of all, essentially making criminals or pointing the finger at those folks, rather than confront the economic system that is forcing people from their homes. We live in a country where you are one medical bankruptcy away, because we don't have Medicare for All, which I've campaigned for 25 years. We're one medical crisis away from bankruptcy and being forced out of your home. If you're a single woman fleeing an abusive relationship and you don't have control over your resources, what do? You could become homeless. So my entire single principle, and the thing I will think about every single day for my district, is what are we doing to raise people's wages throughout the district?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you. I want to let the folks at home know that you are listening to Running on Air, produced, here at KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Althea Billings. Today, we're speaking with candidates from District 2. I have here with me Jonathan Ticini and Antonio Pettyjohn. Join our conversation by calling your questions into the air room at 503-231-8187 or by messaging us on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm. So to get back into this discussion, Jonathan, I had a quick follow-up for you.
Yep.
What is your stance on the homeless camping ban that City Council adopted?
I'm against it. I don't think we should be that's criminalizing someone for an economic reality that they did not have a choice in, mm-hmm. right? And so I think now part of the reason we're at that point is because we've got a City Council currently that has no vision, and I don't think any of those folks are competent, and they should not be certainly serving, I believe, in the City Council in the future. They had no vision. They had no thinking about making sure that we had an economic system that could benefit everyone. And so I'm against it. I think that the rollback of 110 which is related, was a political move, not a policy move. So people were responding to people's anger about something visible they could see. So I understand that people see the person in crisis wandering in the street. And then they say, why are you doing this to me? I'm speaking as kind of the rank and file person. And so politicians being politicians and not thinking through the policy and politicians only caring about getting reelected, they said, okay, my God, we've got to roll this back. The problem was we did one half of the 110, which is we decriminalized. We didn't do the second part, which is set up the services.
Right.
And I think that, frankly, that's the failure of the politicians. That's not the failure of the person who is trying to find shelter over their head.
Right. Well, Antonio, I mean, just to put it to you as well, the homeless camping ban, where do you land on that?
I believe it's cruel and unusual punishment. Me being an advocate for, I have family out there, you know, dealing with mental health and drug abuse, opioids, because of injuries. They were once successful. You couldn't tell. It's like was on top of the world, smart, strong, and then because of an injury, fell victim. And that brought out their mental health issues where mm-hmm. they stopped taking care of their mind. So me being a person who comes from that, and that's forced me to stand up, and I go and personally talk to homeless people, and I go to their events, and I know what they go through when this type of stuff happens. You know, how much stuff they lose, where they already don't have anything.
So yeah, and the sweeps and stuff.
We know that from having vehicles and a couple dollars to be able to put stuff in the car and move it. We still might lose something. If just imagine if you don't and somebody's forcing you away from, everywhere but America. You know, me having European blood, me being half Nigerian, that's what I claim. But I've been all around, is what I'm saying, and no one else. You could go anywhere pretty much and set up wherever. So only here we have to pay or we can't. But the thing, that's why you make me the leader again, you know, because immediate results with issues like this, me coming from background like this, I'm a big firm believer in mental facilities, insane asylums, but the ones who house permanently too. So we want to adopt this again.
So bring back those type of institutions and have people be institutionalized. That's one component of it.
Yeah, that's one component. Okay. And having many of those, but the other thing would be those facilities house people for forever if they need to be.
Okay.
So, but that's just one idea. I have many things laid out. Immediate. It'd be immediate transformation.
Yeah. Jonathan, did you want to respond?
I want to add something that often is not talked about, and it goes back again. You know, I'm a union man, 40-year union member. As again, I'm supported by more unions by far in the city. And so when we think about addiction services, which are really important, I often think about, okay, who are we going to hire to do that? And it turns out, and I learned this in the course of this campaign, that even if the ramp up of the addiction services, which was the second part of Measure 110, had been done properly, you can't find enough people to fill the slots. Hmm. Why is that? Because the wages are too low for those people who are wanting to go in that profession. They're not choosing the profession of addiction services because they're being paid roughly $25 an hour. They're leaving college with huge student debt. And so when they look at a really challenging job, I mean, that they are like angels, people who want to support people who are
not to cut you off, but for me, right?
Let me just.
What I would say is it'd be different for me because I'm Nigerian, so I'm coming with 200,000 people who follow my lead. I'm not saying this is a debate. I'm just saying it falls in my shoes.
So that's how you feel like you would address the staffing.
Yeah, I'm bringing my tribe over here, my warriors.
Gotcha.
To address public safety and this issue of working.
Okay, but
I want to let Jonathan finish here.
Respectfully, that's not connected to the point I was trying to make, okay. Which is that people can't earn enough in this profession. And that's a problem. And it goes again to the issue of raising wages so people can actually make a living in whatever job they have in the city.
Well, I'm going to pivot us a little bit over to talk about the climate crisis. Over the summer, KBOO surveyed our listeners to find out their priorities for this election. And one of the big ones that came back for us and was mentioned the most frequently was the climate crisis. I want to know, is this a priority that you share? And how would you shape Portland's approach to the climate crisis going forward? Why don't we start with you, Antonio?
Well, I feel like the climate issue is a big issue. Me being founder of the Global Unity Network, it says it all, because I believe in senior citizens, which means I believe in the vibrance and the life of reproduction. And I believe in animals. So it's a hazard to our animals, what's going on. I believe that some of the ways we can help this issue and slow this issue down is less plastic use, you know, so not using plastic as much. And then we have to enforce rules and regulations, these laws that's already been, me being a civil rights leader as well, I know a little bit about civil law. So a lot of these rules and regulations have to be enforced.
Yeah.
So by me coming in, and that's the position of the commissioner anyway, I would totally mandate, you know, these rules and regulations where in industries, all industries, we're reducing the gases there. But not only their transportation, I mean, it's even in food, you know, because the gases marinate into the food now. So we're having overall climate issues like that.
Yeah, it touches a lot of different things.
So a few points I'll make.
Sure.
First is some of your listeners may know who Bill McKibben is. Bill was the founder of 350.org, the author of The End of Nature, which came out, I think, 30 years ago. He's been a friend of mine for 30 years. He's issued a sole endorsement in this District 2 race just to me. And this is his quote that he wrote. I didn't put these words in his mouth. Jonathan Tessini fights at the important intersection between environmental change and the lives of workers. It's a crucial place to be. I've been a lifelong climate change activist, along with a labor activist. I actually served on the board of Greenpeace back in the day, 1979, 1980, which tells you how old I am. And I'm endorsed also by the Animal Rights Collective. And let's make a couple of things, very specific things. So number one, the current city council, led by Dan Ryan, made a backdoor secret deal with Zenith Energy to allow one of the most dangerous products to go through our city, tar sands oil. And that was a backdoor deal. I want to emphasize that. That was done in secret, undemocratic, untransparent. Dan Ryan was the leader of that. And that is endangering every single person in this city. If there was to be a catastrophe from one of those railroad cars, not to mention that that spreads pollutants as these railroad cars traverse the city. I intend on reversing that permit. I would have blocked it. I would have not permitted it. Number two, I'm working very closely with the activists around the critical energy infrastructure, which, again, many of your listeners are probably familiar with this. That's the tanks, the fuel tanks that are sitting right in the Willamette River, very much adjacent to District 2. But this affects our entire city, because if there was a major earthquake, that entire area, it's on a liquefied sand, it would potentially explode. It would poison the city. Day to day, those tanks release toxins into the air. I want to work on a plan to move those tanks out of the city. That is something that has not been done by the current city council. We'd have to do that in coordination with the state. So climate change has been my lifelong passion. And if I should not be elected to this city council, I will go back to running an organization that I started 3 years ago, a global organization called Just Transition for All, which your listeners can look up. It's devoted to figuring out what's going to happen to the millions of workers globally who are going to lose their jobs because of our transition to a healthier planet. For example, I'm a proud auto worker. What's going to happen to those folks who are producing cars, electric vehicles that have fewer parts, and therefore these big auto companies, these big multinationals are going to reduce the workforce? Stellantis, one of the biggest auto companies, has already said It's going to have 30% fewer workers in 10 years. We have no plan for that kind of transition. I've worked on economic transitions going back to the first NAFTA in 1992. They've all failed because we've not challenged the economic system. We've not put enough money to support those workers.
Well, I want to go over to you, Antonio, to specifically talk about Zenith Energy, which Jonathan brought up, right? These oil trains actually run through neighborhoods in North and Northeast Portland. And if they were to derail, it would be catastrophic.
Disastrous.
And, you know, the CEI hub as well would majorly impact St. John's. I mean, if things were to go south at the CEI hub, it would be bad for everybody. But it definitely impacts District 2. So I want to know from your perspective, thinking about these fossil fuel companies, where do you land on that?
It's hazardous, and I'm definitely against it. I mean, you're talking to somebody who comes from the neighborhood again. You know, so I come from this neighborhood before gentrification. So we track it back now. We're talking about history again, you know, why a lot of people still in St. John's, in those areas where they're not supposed to be. And if they look them up, you know, they get fined and kicked off of those properties. And so they are living in those conditions. So who's to say that these conditions aren't contributing to this bizarre way of thinking that we're seeing going on with the people?
Mm-hmm. Would you try to roll back the Zenith agreement that Portland has right
absolutely,
now?
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm definitely against it. So anything to prevent it and to show how hazardous this is, I'm for.
Yeah.
So I'm an advocate for who's ever is going against it, and I would personally present that to the mayor.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we are going to take a quick musical break in just a moment, but I want to remind folks this is Running on Air on KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Althea Billings. We're speaking with candidates from District 2, Jonathan Tessini and Antonio Pettyjohn. We'll be back in a minute after this. And we're back to Running on Air on KBOO Community Radio. Support for Running on Air comes from KBOO members and the League of Women Voters. More information about the candidates on your ballot can be found on the League of Women Voters of Portland's website, lwvpdx.org. The League has videos of candidate interviews and forums, as well as links to candidates' written answers to questions and explanations of ballot measures. That's lwvpdx.org. We're back here with District 2 candidates Antonio Pettyjohn and Jonathan Ticini. Folks, you can join our conversation. We would love it if you would. Call the air room, 503-231-8187. You can also message us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, and we'll ask the questions, which I'm going to do right now. Talking about, sorry, Jonathan's miming a drum roll for me here. Jeremy called to ask, and this is a question related to housing affordability. What are your guys' thoughts on any plans for something related to a vacancy tax or prosecuting landlords for overpriced housing? That's what Jeremy has proposed here. Wonder what you guys think about that. Antonio, you want to go first?
Well, again, I'm against it because we don't know the circumstances someone's in. And then we have to be conscious and mindful of our people. So whoever's in charge of these laws has to be, have a vision that extends past their nose to where they can see and feel for others. So it has to make sense for the whole population. You know, so if someone isn't able to afford, we should, you know, if they can prove that, then we shouldn't change anything. So that's how I feel about it. I feel like that stuff is kind of illegal in my eyes.
Yeah, you know? I think this would be a new frontier. But I've spoken with Jeremy before, and I know that some of this has to do with corporate landlords that own a ton of units that are priced above what people can afford. And that, I mean, you've mentioned gentrification, that it contributes to things like that.
Yeah, so again, me being a civil rights leader, I would fight for that, which I'm already doing. One of my other many ideas is purchasing these apartment complexes. $200,000 isn't that much, not even for somebody who works a decent job and saves it up. So being granted this and knowing what you're going to do with it, because I come from that low income situation where we had projects, or not even projects, just facilities that were low income for low income and stayed that amount. So we want to concentrate on some resources like this as well.
Yeah. Well, let's go over here to Jonathan.
Sure. First of all, I want to say to the audience something that I said offline before we came back on. I'm so excited about this conversation because, and I'm about to say something that is not an exaggeration, not hyperbole, this is an absolutely first time in the entire campaign that I've been now 10 months that we've actually had a chance to talk about things in more than sound bites and 60 seconds. So I give a lot of credit to this station, and I hope people will continue to support this station because you're actually giving them a forum for actual conversation. Most of the audiences, unfortunately, and I'm sympathetic to people who have come to these endless forums where candidates just get up and give 60-second talking points, and a lot of it's just a pile of, I'm trying to control my potty mouth, a pile of horse manure. But this is a great thing, and even when we disagree. So let me answer Jeremy. Number one, I've already said I support a vacancy tax. I think that's a very important step. It's been done in Paris, to use example. It's been done in Vancouver, in not our Vancouver, but Vancouver, Canada. It's very doable. I support 100%. I've been one of the early signers of the Renter's Bill of Rights. And one of the things, among the many things, and you should go check out that website. I can't remember the exact URL, but Renter's Bill of Rights. You'll find it if you Google it. Among the things that I love there, aside from keeping any rent 30% of someone's income, are things like basic human things. You cannot evict a family during the school year. Now, that should be basic humanity, like something small like that. A family who is in an economic crisis, they should not be evicted from their home, which would then affect their kids' ability to go to school. And so there's some really brilliant ideas in the Renter's Bill of Rights. I also support either banning or having transparency around these private equity firms who are coming in. They're all based in, I'm from the East Coast, I'm about to say, these East Coast private equity firms who are buying up property just to speculate. And that's raising cost as well. And the last thing I want to say is about affordability. There's kind of a bait and switch that goes on with the issue of affordable housing. Too often what we do with investment in affordable housing, we give money to private developers, and they then develop these so-called, I'm doing air quotes.
The people can't see it,
people can't see it, affordable housing. But in about 10 years, it's unaffordable. What I'm for is universal investment in social housing. I believe housing should be a universal right, just like Medicare and Social Security should be our universal rights. We are the richest nation in human history. No one should be without shelter. So what I want to do, and I'm going to take the example of my former home in New York City. If you walk in the streets of New York City, you know where to look. There are incredibly amazing complexes there, housing complexes, Penn South, Co-op City. That was built with union pension fund money, largely, because back in the 1920s through roughly the 1970s, unions were concerned about making sure their members had housing and they weren't stuck in tenements. And so they built these housing complexes where about 100,000 New Yorkers still live in it. There's like a 30-year waiting list to get a house in there. And we should be able to do that here. I am lucky enough to have a relationship because of my ties to labor with something called the AFL-CIO Housing and Investment Trust. And what that is simply is they take billions of dollars in union pension fund money and they invest it in this kind of housing, partly to backstop the debt. I want to bring that money into Portland. I think I can. And for example, I would argue that we should close the Portland International Raceway. There is no reason to have the PIR exist. It is a sore topic for those people, my constituents, potential constituents who live in North Portland, partly because of the noise and partly because of the pollution. But in this case, just think of what we could do with that piece of land. But by the way, that's owned by the city. So essentially any building we do there, the land costs are zero. So we should close the Portland International Raceway and build beautiful housing complexes there. You'd have to do some infrastructure development in terms of rail and bus, but you could build thousands of units there. And I'm working, I haven't had time to complete it, but I'm working with some folks on that idea.
Okay. Well, I want to pitch that back to you, Antonio. Thoughts on what Jonathan mentioned about social housing? I mean, in this race, you know, we've talked to a lot of candidates and there are certain things that emerge as, you know, relatively agreeable among folks. And there definitely is, I think, I'll conjecture here, you know, say I'm wrong. But that there's people are echoing this idea that, you know, we need to do more for the supply side approach of housing affordability, that there isn't enough. We need to make the permits cheaper. We need to make it attractive to developers, which is a different thing than what Jonathan has described.
Yeah, I feel the same. I feel like a lot of the places that we already have needs to be looked at, like the tiny homes, some of the vacant places, buildings that we have need to be looked into. Some of the shelters need to be reestablished, reopened, and need to be staffed with people with qualifying pedigrees. Mm-hmm. So this goes back to sustainability and longevity. Mm-hmm. So we want to not worry about the temporary, just getting them off the street right now. We want to keep them off the street.
And I'll just 10 seconds. I'll say, I think that I am the only one, along with one other candidate, Mitch Green, who's running in District 4. He's a good friend of mine. I hope people in District 4 vote for him. I think Mitch and I are the only ones talking relentlessly about social housing, mm-hmm. as opposed to affordable housing.
Yeah. Well, I want to let folks at home know this is Running on Air at KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Althea Billings. Today, we're speaking with candidates from District 2. You just heard Jonathan Tessini. Antonio Pettyjohn is here with us as well. We would love for you to join our conversation. Call the air room at 503-231-8187 or message us on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm. Both of you mentioned transportation as an interest or as a priority, so I want to kind of dig into that. Antonio, do you want to start thinking about transportation?
Oh, transportation.
What is your priorities around transportation?
I want to bring it down. I want to bring the pollution down. So I want to make it a more more reliable on bus and a train and floating devices, stuff like that. And so what I mean, like more taking away people's will and want to drive and making it, making them have a desire to want to get on the buses. So these buses and these trains be cleaner, safer. We extend it, extend where they go, taking them to direct places. And I mean, there's some more ideas, but that's just a little sample. You know, I don't like to put all my stuff out there.
You keep some of it close to the vest.
Absolutely. Just in case.
Just in case. Okay, well, thinking about transportation, transit, I want to hear what you think, Jonathan.
First of all, I have to say, maybe this is an age thing. Whenever you say, is it Running on Air?
Running on Air.
I always think of the Jackson Browne song, Running on Empty.
Yeah, but no, that's in the...
Am I the only one that thinks has ever said that?
I think it's, you're the first one to have said it, but when I named the show, I was thinking of it a little.
I thought, am I going to say this? Because this is going to date me, you know, that song. Anyway, I digress. So I'm a lifelong cyclist. And so the first thing I say is we have to make cycling safer. And that means building more protected bikeways and greenways. I think that the more we increase that ability to cycle, that's the kind of transportation I want to do. I do not support more roads and widening of freeways, because what that does, what's known as induced demand, that's just going to create more traffic. One of the things, my proposals, is an indirect way around transportation and climate change. If I can just mention, I've been advocating a four-day work week for the same pay. And I can go into that a little bit about why that's important, why it's being done all around the world. But the main thing that that does is it lets people stay home an extra day, and it reduces then traffic. And it makes all the other transportation nodes that we want to improve much more doable. I think what Antonio said was important, the notion of extending bus lines and making them more regular and predictable. Exactly. One of the things I've heard a lot from constituents is they would be okay even paying the fare.
Yep.
They're not objecting to the fare in the bus. They just want to make it reliable so that it comes more regularly, so they can walk outside and know that I can get from point A to point B in a reasonable amount of time.
And I would definitely add that I would make the rates definitely more easier, so more different sources of ways you can pay, but it would be safer, as I said, safer, cleaner. And what I mean is people cleaning these things, sanitizing these things, and more security.
And the last point about transportation, I've been a big fan and have been working with the advocates of something called the Frog Ferry. It's an amazing idea that would cost $40 million, which in transportation numbers is pretty small.
That's what I'm talking
and
about.
And it would start in Vancouver, it would come down to Cathedral Park, and then it would come down to the South Waterfront. Now, I lived, as I sort of referenced, in New York City, where ferries are a big thing. Anytime someone would come visit me, I would take them on the Staten Island Ferry. You know, you go right past the Statue of Liberty, you come around, it's free. It's not only is it a commuter benefit, it's a tourism benefit, and it would do incredible things. We have these incredible waterways that we underuse. So we could build a ferry, as I mentioned, from that starts in Vancouver, and initially in the first portion of it comes down, in the first stage of it comes down to the South Waterfront. And here's another place where the current city council has completely failed. And I think I mentioned this earlier. We could have funded that entire ferry by essentially appealing to money from the American Recovery Act. And this city council, with no vision, that includes Dan Ryan, who's running for the District 2, basically left money on the table. And so all the projects that they talk about, these candidates, especially the ones in office now, all of those could have been done and funded by the money that the federal government is trying to give us, and it's going to run out at the end of the year. That is such a failure of leadership that it's mind-boggling, because we could have done all the things we talk about in terms of infrastructure, improved the existing infrastructure, built new projects with federal money, and now we've lost that opportunity, unless that money is extended into next year. I'm a little doubtful, given the political realities, that we'll be able to do that, because it passed by basically one vote, the initial act. So I'm a little skeptical, but we left that money on the table.
Mm. Well, we had a caller, Mary, ask, why are we selling our train station? Sort of related to the transit question. This I'm looking at.
Yeah, that would go back to what I'm suggesting. Everything he just said, I'm involved with, and that's pretty much how I talk. So you have to kind of like get your information like you just did. But I'm going to give you what you need, you see. So you get the facts,
yeah,
and then you get the details from elsewhere. So that's be part of my, you know, issue is I would definitely keep the trains, but I would make them different, more like a San Francisco or New York type of situation, or even a China. You know, so.
Well, Thea helpfully has brought up on her computer the article, which I really appreciate, because it mentions, it almost is relevant to what I just mentioned, $250 million in upgrades. That money, if someone had the vision at the city, that money we could have gotten from the feds, or at least a huge portion of it. We could have saved that train station, but for the lack of vision of the current city council. It's really an outrage, and I think the citizens of Portland should be outraged that their city council has basically dropped the ball on easy stuff. I mean, applying for a grant to the federal government that wants to give you money is not hard to do. That's a lack of vision and a lack of understanding and, frankly, a lack of competence.
This is tangential, but what it reminded me of, talking about leveraging federal money, is also Portland Street Response, yeah, because there is an opportunity there that if and when that service goes 24/7 all around the city, excuse me, that there is Medicare funding to be leveraged, yeah, for that as well. I wonder, where do you guys, what do you think of Portland Street Response, Antonio?
I will revamp it.
Okay.
Yeah, reprogram like I did myself. Come with my ideas and my strategy.
What are some of the things that you think you would want to change about Portland Street Response?
The street team, for one, I would make them more like my group. I have a group of people already here in Oregon, Portland, mainly senior citizens. So, you know, I would try to compensate the senior citizens through my position as the commissioner.
Mm-hmm. So to get senior citizens interested in serving on Portland Street Response. So those are the folks that are like the social worker and the medical professional going to people in behavioral health crisis.
Definitely the ones who has the ideas and meet at the meetings. So weekly meetings and social meetings, sociology and psychology. But I have ideas for like my warriors from Africa to be the street response.
Okay.
You know,
a different strategy than Portland Street Response right now. Okay.
Exactly.
And then over to you, Jonathan, Portland Street Response.
I would just say in shorthand, I'm a huge fan of Portland Street Response, and it should be 24/7. It should be robustly funded. I don't want to micromanage what I think is, frankly, doing its job. And yeah, I just think we should 100% support it. I have from the very beginning. And as a city councilor, I will look to, again, fund it 24/7 and robustly fund it.
Yeah. To pivot off of the public safety point, what is something that you think the city is doing really well right now? There's plenty of criticism. We love to talk about criticism, but is there something that comes to mind that Portland is exceeding at or is succeeding at?
Well, let me make a general response. I think that we are, partly because, frankly, and this is not about KBOO, the media tends to overhype things. I mean, crime statistics show that actually crime generally is going down.
Yeah.
And I've lived through the hype over crime waves, and that's usually done by elite media organs like the Oregonian and other places that don't know their you-know-what from their elbow. And they're just doing it for clicks. And actually, while we have challenges, I ask, are there any Portlanders that actually want to uproot and move to another city? And I could name a few, but I'm not going to do
There's
that.
There's a lot of worry about that, whether or not it's actually bearing out in practice.
I think, you know, the one thing you hear, and this is why these media organs hype this, is that businesses say that. You know, rich people say that. Well, you know what I say to businesses? Then leave. And rich people, you don't want to live here? Fine, go somewhere else. The truth is that doesn't happen. they threaten that because they what they want to do is get the reaction of no thought politicians who will then throw tax breaks at them, which then comes out of your pockets, meaning the folks listening. So a business says, oh, I'm going to move unless you do this for me. And so what happens is the current city council gives $250,000 tax breaks to downtown businesses because they're being threatened. When you look at what happened, for example, in New York, people actually don't want to move out of there because that offers, I'm giving a city example of another city, your particular city offers lovely things. So Portland, we have great waterways. We have incredible places to go hike. We have great trails. We have parks that need support. People are not going to move out en masse. There are challenges to the city. And I think as a city councilor, I want to do a couple of things. I want to expand people's minds about what can be done in this city and what we should be doing, but not do it in a sense of banging on the city itself. The politicians don't deserve re-election. They don't deserve their positions. But I think our city has is still in a good place.
Mm-hmm. There's some good things about the city. One is definitely the food and the restaurants.
Yeah.
We have a diverse, big, you know, this is a lot of people come here with their ideas and their restaurants. So that's a good thing. And then the music scene is good. It's just slow right now, but this is one of the top thriving cities in America. I mean, top four or five, really. So this we need to bring it back to how it was and how it really is still. It's just they don't have the vision and they don't have the compassion. It's too much. Like how you see us, we're getting along. We're working together. We know we're going for the same seat, but we could work together. It's three seats. Yeah. Not many people have this mentality, fight each other. So that's what's going on. The wrong leaders have our music scene. Yeah.
Let me add one other thing that's important about life here. So I've knocked on over almost 10,000 doors already, more than anybody in any district, because this is the thing I love doing, is talking to constituents. It comes from my 40 years as an activist, as an organizer. I'm pounding those doors. And one of the things I hear often is people often feel like their taxes are too high. And so I asked them two questions. What are they referring to? And the other question I said is, if you could have great services and things that you really loved, and you could see those accomplishments, would you feel better? And they say yes. And what I want to work on is, it's not that taxes are too high. It's that the working person is shouldering too much of that burden. And I believe that goes to partly the kicker, which is a statewide thing, which is really dumb. And I've proposed a working class kicker. But it also means that when you're sitting in the city council, you have to ask the question, who should the burden be on? And like any city, this is why I often use Portland as a model. We should look to other cities. We're special, but at the same time, people are suffering from the same issue, which is the rich are not paying enough. The elites have a great system. They love it, because it's putting more money in their pockets. But it's the working person, it's the average person who's feeling that burden. And it's easier to point to the person who's walking addicted in the streets or homeless, something visible, because they can't see the Phil Knights of the world who are getting away with getting more money and not paying their fair share. That's the way we rebuild our society.
And I might relate it back to our sports as well. Didn't we just get a new women's sport?
WNBA team.
Yeah.
We got confirmed for that.
So right, that should bring more vibrancy to the city.
Yeah, they've been working on that for a long time. Antonia, I wanted to just quickly, in the last couple of minutes we have here, you mentioned the music scene and the Live Nation venue development deal. That's been something that people have been talking about a lot recently, and you know, it would be developed not really that far from KBOO. What do you think about that situation?
Falls right into place with what I've been advocating, what I've been saying for years. So it's like it's not going to end there. It's just that's part of it. It needs to be a large amount of recreational things going on in the city, throughout the city, different places. It just needs to be known for that.
Yeah. I mean, there's independent artists and venues have been pretty upset by the way that the deal's gone down because of inviting in, you know, more
Live
corporate,
Nation,
yeah, more
Nation.
Conglomerate.
And, yeah, a good friend of mine, Jamie Dunphy out in District 1, has led that fight, and I urge people to vote for him as well.
Yeah, and me being, like I said, I've already we all know the struggles of being successful as a musician, and I'm you guys' star. I'm you guys' champion. We don't have many here. We had Jermaine, which was my twin. He was the fighting champion, the gymnast. Mm. He went number one back when we were younger. Everybody mistakes me for him, and then I'm the vocalist.
Yeah.
So, and then my uncle was Governor Neil Goldsmith. So we had life coaches like that.
Uh-huh.
So last, do we have less comments or?
We're gonna have to tie it up in a bow here. But I want to thank you guys both so much for coming on the show. Two seconds.
I would just say I asked voters in District 2 to rank me number one. I will be the fighter for all working people, endorsed by 27 unions. If you don't live in District 1, in District 2, tell your friends, if you live in other districts, to rank Jonathan Tessini number one. I will be the council person for the working person.
Last words over here.
I'm Antonio Pettyjohn Blue. I've been doing this a long time. My track record speaks for itself. It's public safety. Bruce Broussard is my leading recruiting Marine. So we're here to save and rescue the world. So make sure you vote for me. Second district is 3 seats, but you definitely have to have a dog up there.
Okay. Well, thank you both so much, folks at home. You've been listening to Running on Air at KBOO Community Radio. I've been here with Antonio Pettyjohn and Jonathan Tressini from District 2. You can find all of our episodes of Running on Air on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm/runningonair. Episodes are also available wherever you get your podcasts. Our engineer is Bob Davis and our editor is Eric Leuschner. Tune into the next episode of Running on Air. It's tomorrow at 11 a.m. with candidates from District 3. I've been your host, Althea Billings. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM in the Portland metro area and all over the world at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification.